PushLiving.com presents the Wheelchair Accessible Lifestyle Podcast, pushing the boundaries of disability-inclusive design, travel, and lifestyle. Here, you'll find stories of triumph, courage, and clarity. You'll discover you're not alone and hear from inspirational guests from the disability community and beyond. You'll get fresh reviews of the best inclusive travel locations and fabulous products to help make your life more functional, healthy, and fun. We will intrigue, enlighten, and encourage you to live your best life on wheels. Whether you're a wheelchair entrepreneur, a stay-at-home mom or dad, or newly disabled, you will love the advice and ideas we share to help you learn, grow, and push your own boundaries. Now, let's roll.
Okay, hi, this is Deborah with PushLiving.com, and we are going to be interviewing today Mr. Bill Forrester from Australia, Melbourne to be exact, and he is with Travability. Travability has been around since about 2007, I believe, and he is one of the thought leaders in the world of accessible or inclusive, as we like to say it now, travel. Hello, Bill, how are you tonight?
I'm very good, Deborah.
Wonderful. Listen, Bill, I've been seeing you doing a lot of commenting on LinkedIn. If anybody wants to follow Bill on LinkedIn, Bill Forrester with two R's, right, Bill?
With two R's, yes.
There you go. And if you are capable and qualified, he'll probably allow you to be his contact on LinkedIn. But anyway, Bill, you have been talking about how we need to build programs and services for people with disabilities versus trying to build inclusive environments. Can you tell me a little bit about what you mean there? I think it's a little bit of a shift in thinking, correct?
Look, it is a little bit of a shift in thinking, and I don't think one replaces the other, by the way. We still need accessible environments, first and foremost, that are accessible and inclusive to everyone. However, that's not leading to a translation as far as industry is concerned or service providers are concerned. It's all very well to say we must build a ramp or install a hearing aid. Mm-hmm. But unless business understands why, that's all they'll ever do. And they won't then think about the broader needs of what a traveller or a consumer with a disability actually wants from them.
What do you mean when you say broader needs? You mean the experience itself, what they want to actually gain as far as the emotional
experience? Let's suppose you own a winery. Well, it's even the physical experience a little bit. Let's suppose you own a winery for a moment, and mm-hmm. you've got your lower countertop and you've got your ramp and you've got a wide opening front door. If you get someone coming in there that is quadriplegic with limited hand use, or someone who's a little bit elderly whose hands are limited by arthritis, mm-hmm. how do they actually partake in a wine tasting? You know, a packet of straws might be 60 cents. Mm-hmm. Unless you're thinking about the whole picture and the whole experience and why someone actually comes to your premises, you don't think about buying that pack of straws, because it hasn't even crossed your mind. All you've done is put in the ramp and the door, but mm-hmm. you haven't thought about the greater needs.
Okay, so that's actually taking it to another level of sensitivity and understanding, and certainly most people would never even think about a straw. But when you talk about programs, you talk about building programs, building activities, that's not really an example of that, is it? Because you clearly want to drink wine when you're there.
That's just enhancing your service. When I talk about programs, I'm thinking more of, say, resorts. Mm-hmm. You know, a resort may have an accessible room. It may have an accessible swimming pool, especially in America now. It's part of the ADA.
Right.
But have they thought beyond that? If families go to a resort, they might want a cycle. So have they got a hand cycle as part of their bicycle fleet that they've already got? If they've got off-the-beach sailing, have they got one of the little Hansa dinghies that can be sailed by anybody in safety? Have they got a sea kayak with a rigid back in it for people with a disability? Have they got the paddles that allow the clip gloves, again, for people with quadriplegia who can't actually grab the thing? Have they got a stand-up paddle board? If they've got stand-up paddle boards, and they got the version that'll take a wheelchair. It's all of that.
I want to go there, thing. Bill. Do you know of any place like that? That sounds fantastic.
No, that's the whole point, because I don't think we've taught industry enough about what the needs. I coin an expression quite often when I'm giving presentations, that disability is the only minority group that anybody can join in an instant.
Yes, Bill, you are correct. I do think that most people really are not aware that this is the only disability group that they, or the only minority group that they could join in an instant. And I do believe that businesses and resorts have been compliance oriented, like you righteously say so often, versus, you know, really embracing the idea of having people with various disabilities be a part of their resorts and their communities and their services. So how do we bridge that gap from compliance to embracing and fully wanting to include them and looking at them, like you said, as a customer versus something that they have to do?
I think there's two parts to that question. One, we need better education. If you look at some of the work that Visit England have done, they have dropped a lot of the compliancing type nature that they used to do. Visit England today have got some really clever industry programs where they actually go out and use people to conduct workshops, not on accessibility, not on access audits per se, but on the usability, friendliness, what sort of products and services are sitting behind their product
the compliance. England is accessible, however, have you found it to be as accessible as, say, the United States or Canada?
Define accessibility. In terms of physical accessibility, I would say not. In terms of the information that's provided and the welcome that's got, I think they're probably a little bit ahead.
Isn't that amazing that they would actually have the thoughtfulness to be ahead in one area, but then not make their subways accessible like New York? I mean, people who went to the London Olympics, the Paralympics as well, you know, found it to be very frustrating and difficult. I remember reading a blog about that. A young lady, I have to think of her name, she went with her husband and just, it was just a terrorizing experience trying to get her way around there.
It is a little bit, but you've got to also remember that some of those London subways date back to the turn of the previous century, where accessibility wasn't even on the radar. Now, when you're dealing with infrastructure that is that old, and some of those London subways, I don't know how much you know about the London subways, but they're not all just underground like some of the New York subways. Some of these things are deep. Some of them have got three lines crossing each other on top of one another. So you're looking at something that could be 80 feet deep.
No. If you're saying, like, if it is more program-oriented, then you would think that they would have appropriate maps and signage so that she didn't have to
go through. They have. The London Underground has actually produced an accessibility map which shows you every accessible station, and it goes one stage further. It actually route plans for you so that if you want to go from point A to point B, it'll show you which interchanges you've got to use, which interchanges are accessible, and it maps it out for you. But it's not a matter of just getting off at every station where there's an interchange.
Okay. Well, you know, that sounds great. If it actually works, we were in Paris and we tried that, and my daughter and I, it didn't work out at all because the first place we got, the signage wasn't any good, and then the elevator was broken twice. One time a lift was broken, and one time we got stuck in an elevator, like literally stuck in an elevator that was the kind that goes from underground upward to the sky. So at the top of the elevator was plexiglass, which means it was hot. That was not a fun experience. So if it works...
The French aren't in the same league. If you look at Europe, Europe's not a homogenous thing. England are leading the way in terms of trying to change the paradigm. They may not be leading the way necessarily in accessibility. And again, you've got to think back to history. You've got buildings in England that were built in the 1400s. The United States and even countries like Australia are luckier in that they're not saddled with some of those old medieval buildings. Having said that, Germany have got a really big program on accessibility. They've got a lot of work to do, but they're ripping out cobblestones and replacing them with flat cobblestone lookalike surfaces.
Oh, that's going to take years. That's fantastic.
It's going to take years.
Cobblestones will do a wreck on your back. Oh my goodness, when we were anywhere in Paris and in France, I remember saying that, you know, this isn't off, but I think that our listeners should know this and they would be interested. I did have a free wheel, which is a contraption that helps push your front caster wheels up off the ground so you don't have the, you know, the cobblestones getting caught up in your front wheels. So that was really helpful. Shout out to Free Wheel. But my back ended up killing me because you're still going boom, 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 boom on the back two wheels. And so without any flexible wheels and without any shock absorbers, I literally was starting to really have a lot of pain there. And I know that it can't be healthy for your spine. And, you know, you have to, that's a whole nother story. I ended up saying that from then on, I was going to get shock absorbers, which I did. I did get a wheelchair with shock absorbers, which recently cracked on me. So I have to start over. But now they have the tires that can create that same type of absorption, which I think is really cool and people can look into. Anyway, I just wanted to move that over as an aside thought. If you do go to Europe and you do want to try out the cobblestones, think about your poor aching back. Little tip.
But there's a look, there's an interesting thing there. You took your own free wheel. I would be encouraging businesses and resorts to actually have a few of them.
Yes.
And have someone who knows how to adjust them. Because again, it's a relatively cheap investment. You look at some of these major resorts all over the world, the amount of money they've got tied up in bikes, in catamarans,
oh,
in
my
jet skis.
Goodness. And what about the one, because the free wheel really, do you think they have a version now that can use a foot plate that folds up and down, but it was more for a rigid foot plate and it's really best
originally for a rigid foot plate.
I think it's best for rigid foot, but have you seen the one that, you know, do you remember the name? It just pulls up and it hooks onto the sides of your wheelchair. A Firefly, I think it's called, and it's motorized.
And that's an English device.
Now that would be great because even with the freeway, you still have to manually push. So and it does make your steering a little bit off. You know, it's a little harder. I find it personally harder to push it. But so when you're going long distances and you want to be a tourist, I mean, if you could just hook a Firefly up, you don't need to worry about having something that is.
Now they're a little big though. There is another device that clips onto the back of the wheelchair. It's just a rotating powered wheel.
Yeah, but that's not going to But that's not going to help you.
Not going to help you on the cobblestones. No.
Not at all. And trust me, and that thing, that can be dangerous. You have to get some experience using that, and it's not something that someone's just going to be able to grab and rent for the day necessarily and feel safe. I mean, I've had friends who, you know, have, stopped using them because they just didn't feel safe. But
Now, you can, though, on the one you're talking about, the one that clips onto the front,
mm-hmm.
if you're going to make them generally available, say, at resorts or major hotels or major hire organizations. Mm-hmm. And again, I would be encouraging more and more organizations to think about offering them as hire alternatives amongst other hire equipment destinations. Mm-hmm. You can program those devices to have their maximum speed limited.
That's a good idea. See, that's better for your elderly population who needs to use a wheelchair or people who just can't push long distances. You have to pop up your front wheels. That's important. But now you have an option between a free wheel, which is, you know, $400, $500 investment, versus a Firefly or something of that nature, which is electric. And you just, you know, use your little hands and you go. Now, you know, there's other options out there. I mean, certainly for people with limited hand that are more like an electric wheelchair power source that I'm sure are something that people... But boy, yeah, you're talking about a lot of money in order to, you know, get the right type of equipment for that environment. But that is what you're speaking of when you talk about programs. It's not just, yes, you can get into my hotel front door. Yes, you can get in the bathroom. You can take a shower and you can get to the buffet area. Or actually, you can get in the door of the buffet area. Whether or not you can actually serve yourself in the buffet is a whole other story.
That's just another question. And the one that people often forget when they're developing resorts or even larger hotel complexes, they forget about the garden and the picnic tables.
Oh, yeah. There's so much they forget about now that you think about it, right?
Well, why have those two ornamental brick steps down into the garden, which really mm-hmm. serve no purpose? Take them out and just slope the lawn. But again, look at the picnic tables. Make sure that you can get a wheelchair under one end at least so that people can all sit at the table together. Now, it's funny. Those sort of picnic tables that allow a wheelchair to get to one end are also really important for elderly people that need back support and can't just sit on a bench seat and might want to bring their own chair to a picnic. So there's wider applications if you think about how something is going to be used, as opposed to saying we must have 10% of our picnic tables accessible. Why not make them all accessible? Why not just make change to the design so that every table is accessible?
I mean, I'm just thinking about every time I've ever been in anywhere on a trip. I mean, everything that's available as far as optional tours or, you know, whether it's a walking tour or going to a jazz club that's like the famous jazz club in town, which I would love to do, or going on a boat and snorkeling, anything. Most of the time, they're not accessible. And they don't have, and if you go to the concierge, I mean, certainly they're not going to have a list of things that are. You have to do all that research, either using a travel agency like yours, Travability, or others out there who do great work, you know, doing inclusive tours. You know, you have to be in the know and know what is available. But wouldn't that be nice if
unless you can change the attitude of destinations. And I think one of the things that doesn't happen, when you go down the compliance method, you're focusing on individual venues, individual establishments, individual resorts, individual hotels. What you don't get on board is the destination managers, which might be the local tourism bureau or the tourism association.
So it's their job to do that more, I think.
Yeah, and that's what Visit England did. Visit England actually picked out five regions in England. Mm-hmm. And set about educating the whole lot. Then they did a really interesting thing. They did a series of newspaper advertisements in London to encourage Londoners with a disability to get out into the area. So not only did they encourage the areas to develop, they then went through some dollars in advertising to show them that people would actually come. And they had some interesting slogans, like one of them was, relaxation, romance, and ramps.
Another one
was sun, sea, and step-free access. Wow. So they really played on the words. And this was London Daily Newspaper advertising. This is mainstream stuff. It wasn't in a disability magazine. It was mainstream London Daily Newspaper. History, Heritage, and Handrails was another one.
My goodness. You know, that's so exciting because it's like for the first time they're actually acknowledging that we exist and saying, you know, they're playing to us or marketing to us, which you never see, really. I love it. So how did they fund that program? Is that Visit England?
They invested £450,000. So what's that? That's about $650 US in campaign.
Who's they?
Visit England. The Visit England, the National Tourism Authority of England.
Oh, I see. So it's a national program funded by tax dollars.
It's a national program. Accessible tourism is actually part of the English Strategic Tourism Initiatives. So it's one of the five key tourism pillars. Now, when you put it into that context, all of a sudden you change the focus. Visit England also run their Visit England Tourism Awards, their National Tourism Awards, and they've now got a series of Access for All awards. They make a big thing of it.
Okay. Is that the Responsible Tourism Awards? Because they have an Access Award category.
No, that's just the Visit England Access for All Awards.
Oh, so it's...
And there's a whole series, and they put out a beautiful booklet every year. So that not
okay,
only...
Okay, I'm sold on England now.
But it's not there yet. See, one of the interesting things, America really has got the world's best accessibility and yet probably one of the poorest methodologies to encourage businesses to promote it. You've got places like the Kennedy Space Center, whose accessibility is second to none. But in order to find out about that as a tourist, you've got to go to the footnote on their homepage under ADA. Compliance to actually find out what's there.
And there's no imagery within the whole website probably of anybody, a child or an adult in a wheelchair or any type of mobility.
Instead of it being part of their ordinary touring offices, it's hidden away as an ADA compliance issue.
It's a secondary category, not that important and not certainly something that your marketing to is equal. It's kind of like, it reminds me so much of, you know, segregation. I mean, I'm so grateful that the ADA exists and it was passed in 1992. And, you know, and I was around. I was a person with a disability before that, so I know what it's like not to be able to have anything. But we really do need to go to the next level and to get into, you know, out of segregation, you know, separate seating, separate spots for bathrooms, separate parking, and just make it simple and make all the tables in the restaurant accessible. And like you said, all the benches and all the programs and just make the website
universal. Yeah, forget about the compliance. Forget about the compliance. Start seeing accessible infrastructure as a really key asset.
I love just to put it.
Just to put it into context, and this is an interesting, this is what industry don't yet seem to understand. In 2014, accessible tourism was worth £12.4 billion to the UK economy. But forget that number, because big numbers always make people's eyes glaze over a little bit. If you put it into context, if you look at the volume and the percentage of total spend, accessible tourism in England was 20% of all day trips, both in volume and in spend, and 14% of overnight trips. Now, that is a big slice of the tourism market.
Now, is that because you think, is that something that has changed since the Visit England program began? I mean, did they encourage all that, or was that?
I think they've encouraged it, but it's also being driven by the aging population as well. Yeah. You know, the growth rate between 2009 and 2013 in England of all tourism was zero. The increase was 11%.
Okay.
The growth rate in accessible tourism over the same period was 33%. So it was three times. And if you look at all the projections, the stuff that's been done in America by Open Doors, the work that's been done by Boston Consulting, the earlier work that was done by Simon Darcy here in Australia, and now this research of Visit England, are all pointing to accessible tourism being worth 25% of the total tourism spend by 2020. Now, I don't know of many industries that just deliberately turn their back on a quarter of the market. And I think their reason for doing it is they simply don't understand it.
Or they're afraid, or, yeah. And they just don't, or they don't know it's there. They don't know it exists.
They don't know it's there. And I think you've hit another nail on the head. We've got many disability organisations throughout the world that are hell-bent on litigation, are hell-bent on negativity. The disability community itself, many of the peak disability organisations worldwide, continue to talk about the percentage of people with a disability that are on or below the poverty line. And that is a real issue, and I don't blame them for taking that point of view. But when it comes to areas like tourism, people with a disability travel at exactly the same percentage as the general population, because you know something? There's a big percentage of the general population also on or below the poverty line.
Right.
And we need to change the perception here. When it comes to leisure and recreation and tourism, there is no difference between the percentages of the general population or people with disability that travel or go out to dinner or go to football matches or, you know, or go to the park and play with the kids.
Right.
Or enjoy the national park experience. So that's the mindset change we've got to shift. The other thing that people also forget, it's not the sheer numbers of people with a disability, but if you're a family person or you're part of a work group or group of friends or whatever, if someone with a disability can't go somewhere, the whole group doesn't go somewhere. So there's the multiplier effect.
Absolutely. I mean, very few people go someplace by themselves, Bill. You're right.
They don't go. So the straight disability statistics that everybody quotes are largely irrelevant. You've got to multiply it by nearly four in terms of the economic impact if you're not catering for someone with a disability. Even wedding groups. If you've got someone in the wedding party, someone in the bridal party that is a wheelchair user and the venue's not accessible, you're going to miss out on the whole wedding. So famous corporate conference these days. You've got diversity of employment initiatives all over the world.
But having the program, you know, the programs and really seeing it all the way through. One time I remember I went on it and I was the ADA coordinator for a major corporation back right in 1992 when everything passed down in Miami. It's a funny story. They had this big retreat. This is, you know, a major insurance corporation, so they had lots of money. So they sent the entire human resources and development department to Sanibel Island for a retreat, which is to do strategic planning and, you know, all the important things that HR and development people do. And so the very first night, there was like a big welcome party, and the vice president who hired me personally was very excited that, you know, I was there and felt pretty proud to Peacock that he got recruited me. And I was going to do this ADA initiative and be in charge of that training project for everyone. And he had his welcoming party in his suite. And it was all catered with food and drink and everything. So we all get there, and I drove my van over from Miami to Sanibel in Florida. And so some of the my coworkers were all at the hotel together, and his suite was in a better, nicer section of the resort, of course, because he's the VP. So we all get there. We see them all waving to us from the third floor balcony, and there was no elevator. So we're like, oh my goodness. He forgot that his suite was inaccessible to the ADA coordinator who was there. So that was so humiliating and embarrassing. But that's just an example of have someone who should know better and knows everything about it and really wants to do well. It just slips their mind. Right.
Okay, but let me take that one stage further now. Even if you do everything right and you do all your conferencing and you've got your ramps onto the stage, there's been plenty of conferences that haven't got about the ramp on the stage. How many conferences have you been to where you see water bowls for service dogs?
A ton.
Oh, you have. Good. I've never seen one.
Oh, for service dogs. I'm sorry. I thought you meant just dogs. And I was thinking, you know, in Florida, it's like a big thing when you go to restaurants now and you sit outside. There's little bowls and they welcome the dogs.
Service dogs in a conference.
Yeah, well, that's, I guess that would be an accommodation that someone would ask for. That would be an easy program modification. But yeah, really, I love where you're going with this. I think that it's exciting, and I think that the people like you who are the knowledge leaders and who know what to do and know exactly how to do it, people need to start hiring you and get out there and just make these entire tourism boards accessible and do Visit England type initiatives everywhere that we can. I mean, the Key West, I think that's a great idea. So when are you starting, Bill?
Whenever the phone rings.
This is true. So if you want to find Bill, to recap, he's with travability.travel out of Melbourne, Australia, but he does travel often and can definitely do speaking engagements, and he's done visitors guides and illustrations, and feel free to take a look at that. There's also some interesting things for those of us with disabilities on his site, some really great articles. I know that I've done a few myself. And I know he's looking for writers as well. So if anybody has some really fun travel experiences they want to document, that I'm sure he will consider putting them up and giving you a byline and a link back to your page. And any people who are travel providers or specialized travel providers, please let us know at pushliving.com as well, because we do often get requests for specialized travel and inclusive vacations. And we love to be able to work with our partners in that regard. So, Bill, to wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to say that you feel that those of our audience, our Push Living audience, would like to hear, or some resources or advice?
Well, the only thing I'll say, most of the stuff we've spoken about is available on the website, the travability.travel, but there's an article on there called A Blueprint for the Development of a Successful Tourism Strategy, which has these examples from Visit England, plus a few more, some interesting, and all the statistics are there, and some of the philosophy of how do you develop an accessible program in that article. So,
excellent. Thank you so much, Bill. Well, it was a pleasure having you on. And you are just, honestly, you just have such a nice way about you and a elegant and educated view. I know you've been doing this for so many years, and we really appreciate all the knowledge you have to offer us.
Pleasure.
Okay, have a good night. Bye, Bill.
You too. Bye.
Talio.
This podcast is sponsored by Push Living Photos, because using disability images in your marketing will help you create a positive and inclusive brand. When you buy Push Living photo stock images, you get great photos of real people. And you can feel good knowing that your purchase is helping to change lives. This is the only stock image library that not only pays their photographer royalties, but also pays their models with disabilities for each sale. For them, this could mean help with out-of-pocket medical expenses, wheelchairs, home modifications, adapted vehicles, and more. The benefits are as diverse as our models. Show the world you care about people living with disabilities. Visit our website to purchase stock photos, join our team of models, or register to become a photographer. PushLivingPhotos.com.